I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I'm Claire Mutimer.
And I'm Susie Coulson. Welcome to The Backstory. In each episode, we'll be hearing about an experience that has happened to someone that shaped who they are.
30 minutes that remind us that everyone's dealing with something. So we're a documentary podcast. A docupod.
Except you made that word up. This run of four has a particular theme. We're looking at people whose jobs involve doing good of some sort. So, Claire, last week you went down to Penguin's Random House to meet with a nurse, didn't you?
Yes, that's right, Susie. I went down to meet Christy Watson, who worked as a nurse and firstly wrote two fiction books and has now written a book all about nursing, which is called Language of Kindness, A Nurse's Story.
Okay.
It's a great read and it chronicles all sorts of her experiences working in the NHS. In her introduction, she tells us that she started off her career thinking that nursing was like a combination of chemistry, biology, physics, pharmacology and anatomy, but now realises that it's actually much more about philosophy, psychology, art, ethics and politics.
Oh my God, that sounds fascinating and full on, so I'm looking forward to this one, Claire.
I know something happened in your life. And I'd just like to know where you'd like to start today.
After having been a nurse for many, many years, I found myself on the other side of the fence. And it was about 6.5 years ago. My dad was dying very quickly from lung cancer. And I was suddenly a relative instead of being a nurse. And I think at that moment, my whole understanding of nursing and my whole understanding of many things really switched and changed. That was a turning point for me.
I bet it was. So tell me about like the experience.
So he was adamant that he didn't want to go to hospital and he didn't want to die in hospital. And so thanks to a really good nursing team, he was able to stay at home. And I think it's a choice that not many people have because most people don't really want to die in hospital. But the team was set up so that my dad's nurse, Cheryl, could come out and be with him and keep him at home. She was a nurse prescriber, so she prescribed all his drugs. She managed his care and did everything. So he was cared for by Cheryl and also by my mum, who did a lot of nursing as well, but the non-technical side of nursing. And for our family, I think it was really important to us that he was able to die in a way that he wanted to die. And he was a man who always lived as he wanted to live. And so that just carried on. And I remember a day before he died, actually, I was standing outside his bedroom and I didn't know it would be a day before he died, but Cheryl, his nurse, she'd ushered me outside and she treated me like a daughter, which is exactly right, not like a nurse. And I remember listening to him shuffling around with the sheets inside the bedroom and then he shouted, "Jump in, Cheryl." And she started shrieking with laughter and they just laughed and laughed and laughed. And they had that brilliant relationship and friendship, which helped him be who he was until right at the very last moment, and she helped him die with humour and with dignity, which is exactly what he wanted.
That's amazing. And so were you ever tempted to sort of get involved as, you know, having your expertise as a nurse, or did you manage to sort of like kind of hold off that role?
It was very hard. I think it's very hard for any nurse or doctor who has a family member going through illness, because the family look to you for answers that you don't necessarily have. So my background is paediatric intensive care, so I don't really know anything much about adult oncology. But of course, when this thing happened, my mum and dad were very much asking me questions about things that possibly no one had the answers to, like how much time and what does this mean. The other thing that was very difficult, I think, for me was knowing too much, in the sense that when my dad started having palliative radiotherapy, because he wanted more time, I also knew that the side effects would be horrific. And sometimes there's a thing as too much time, and things start to go very badly wrong and you can end up suffering. So I've seen so much suffering, it's hard to unsee it. And I hated the idea that my dad would suffer in any way. And as it turned out, I think he didn't have it very long, because he sort of said, sod this for a game of soldiers, it's awful. And then had a very peaceful death. But I think it's very hard when you do know too much to unknow that stuff.
I bet. And Cheryl noticed really small things, didn't she? I wonder if you can tell me about that.
So she did all the advanced things, and it was thanks to her sort of skill and experience, I suppose, that she managed to focus on the small things. And they seemed tiny, but they were huge to my dad. So she would give his pain medication just at the right moment, just when he was about to peak with his pain, not at the time when it peaked, so that she knew him well enough by the tone of his voice. And she knew the medication and the reactions he would have to the medication well enough to know just at the right moment when to give it. And also things like staying really quiet after she'd given his medication, so that it had time to work before he had to have a conversation, or feel like he had to have a conversation with somebody. And she opened the curtains just at the right moment. I remember that really clearly, because she was judging when he could bear to look at the light and when the light was too much for him. And it was these tiny things that maybe go unnoticed when you're not a nurse, maybe. But as a nurse, I could definitely see that she was really focusing on those things, and she understood the importance of those. And it was huge. It was in these details that made such a big difference to my family.
Yeah, it's such a finely sort of honed skill, isn't it? Just to, I suppose, you're watching for every little clue. Did you learn anything from Cheryl, despite your, experience that you already had?
I think I learned that the job of nursing is, it was a sort of recognition that nurses, the vast majority of nurses, do such a fantastic job on a daily basis without thinking about it. So Cheryl came to my dad's funeral, for example, and I started thinking of the number of funerals I've been to, which is a lot, and all on my day off, and it was her day off. And then I started thinking, well, you don't really see medics or doctors there or other healthcare professionals, but you always see nurses. And that's an astonishing thing. And then I started thinking about the fact that she was on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to me and my brother, because we were texting her constantly from London, which must have been so irritating when she's got a whole caseload to deal with. But she made us feel like we were the only family we were looking after. And she was looking after thousands of families, probably. And again, that's the job of a nurse, and that's the job I'd been doing and my colleagues had been doing so much. And even now, she pops in to see my mum. And it's nearly 7 years since my dad died. And so the job of the nurse doesn't really end with the shift or with the year or with the passing of the years. It's much bigger and much more than that. And so I think learning from Cheryl was learning what an amazing job nursing is and the importance of it for all of us, and what a fantastic job that I'd been doing for so long and all my colleagues had been doing for so long. And why hadn't I been shouting about that in my writing? And why was nursing the most undervalued of all the professions? So those were the kind of questions that I was starting to ask. It was more about questioning than learning, I think.
So you went back to work quite quickly, I think, after your dad had died. Can you tell me about that?
I went back to work much too soon. I went back to work before his funeral even. And my colleagues, and particularly my manager at the time, said that he thought it was much too soon. And just take some time off. They were a very supportive team, amazing. But I was very worried that if I didn't go back, then I may never go back at all. And so I went back. I remember just getting through the day and just being in a daze. I'm fairly sure that's just the kind of numbness stage of grief, or whatever stage of grief I was at. But just thinking, right, I've just got to get through the day and keep busy, because then everything will just feel better with time. I think I was very wrong about that. But when I went back to work, the first call that I had, because I was on the crash team, was to the oncology wards, which is inevitable, I guess, in life. And I remember running through the ward and just seeing all these patients and families and wives and husbands who just reminded me so much of my mum and dad. And it was certain details. It was, everyone seemed to be wearing Marks and Spencer's pyjamas, which obviously my dad wore, as many dads do. Oh. And there was fruit on the table, on the bedside tables, which again is something universal in hospital, but it was untouched fruit. So there felt something really significant about that to me, and sad. And then, of course, the smiling, the people smiling too brightly, like I guess my mum smiled too brightly, and we were all smiling too brightly, because what else can you do when you're going through this awful thing? And the crash call, it was to a patient in a side room. It turned out to be a false alarm. I think he had an anaphylactic reaction to something, or query. And the team were coming out saying, no, it wasn't, he's fine. But he called me in and asked me to read the racing results from the newspaper. And I did. I sat with him and I read these results. And I think there were just too many things that reminded me of my dad about this patient, not least the racing results, which my dad would have loved. And I'd held in tears for so long. In fact, I did really weird things like laughing at the funeral. And I think I'd just been in total denial about the level of my own grief.
Right.
That all these things with this patient suddenly just made me burst into tears. And I saw his slippers again, Marks and Spencer's type slippers underneath the bed. And I just started sobbing, actually sobbing and crying so hard. And he really held me, this patient. He just sort of pulled me towards him and he kept saying, you'll be all right, you'll be all right. And I remember just crying into his skin and really wishing this man, who was a complete stranger, who was dying of cancer, would be my dad. And I remember wishing, I just want him back for a second, just a second. And I suppose that was a pivotal moment as well, because it made me realise that we don't know how lucky we are until we've lost that thing. So that was my growing up moment, I think.
And do the NHS give compassionate leave, like, in a, you know, generally, like, quite well? Or because it must be, it's a different job to go back to, isn't it? Like, you know, there's some jobs you can go back to and you're not faced with death and, like, the same things as you might have just come from. But, you know, you need to be on your sort of top game with being a nurse in the NHS, I thought.
I think it's the same as any employer that is a large organisation that's struggling with numbers and finances and the rest of it. But it tends to be that teams are very supportive. And within teams, I suppose the level of teamwork you experience in the NHS is perhaps greater because the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
So you do trust each other and you grow a bond that is sort of more than friendship, really. It becomes like a little family at work. And your colleagues will always have your back in terms of things like that. So they'll cover for you, or people might take sort of non-clinical work for a while, or people are quite accommodating within teams. It's a very local level. It might not be organisationally led, but certainly your immediate colleagues will always try and, in my experience, try and help you out and support you through anything like that, because they understand that, like you said, it's very re-triggering when you're going back to a job where you're around death, life and death situations all the time.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And it sounded like it came at a tricky time for you, because your like marriage was finishing, and you know, did a lot of things happen at the same time? Or
so I've never been married.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I was with my ex-partner for 12 years, and yeah, that year was the year of doom. We broke up. I think it was a long time coming, but perhaps that was kind of the final thing that happened. And then, I very, very hazy memories of that year. I can remember my dad's funeral very well. And we drove up to Liverpool, because he's in the Isle of Man. And we drove up to Liverpool and got the ferry across. And the ferry was full of sort of family members on the way to my dad's funeral. So it's the most depressing ferry journey. 4 hours across the Irish Sea of just talking about you know, how are we going to get through the next few days kind of thing. But I suppose the breakup of my relationship was very sad, but in comparison with losing my dad, again, perspective is such an enormous thing. It didn't feel as big as maybe it would have done at other times. And I felt very, very sad for my kids, but also very sad for them that they'd lost their granddad permanently, and they have a dad and they see their dad. But I feel like they as well would have said that year was awful because granddad died, not that year was awful because we split up. Mm. Yeah.
And how long did you carry on with nursing after your dad died?
So I've only just come off the register about 2 months ago, but I stopped on the ward a couple of years ago. I just couldn't carry on.
I've got a question for you, which I've always wondered about, is why do nurses work 12-hour shifts?
It's 12 and a half hours. The reason is money. The reason that we're told is it's much better quality of life and family friendly. But the actual reason is you save money if nurses work 12 and a half hour shifts because you don't have the crossover period. So when there was earlies and lates, there would be at least an hour in the middle where the early would be on and the late would come on. And so you would have, say, for example, an early work until 2 p.m. and the late would come on at 12, and you're then paying for double the amount of nurses during that time.
Right.
When they're crossing over.
Yeah.
And of course, you cut that out if you do 12 and a half hour shifts because you've only got nights or days.
Right.
So it's a cost saving exercise. And like anything, you can dress that up any way you like. But my view is that if you are, for example, working Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Boxing Day this year, as many of my nursing friends are, who've got families, they can't afford to live in cities. So they might not live in London, but work in London, for example. And so they live an hour and a half away. So that's 3 hours on your 12 and a half hour shift, if you get away in time, which you may well not at this time of year. And what happens now, because nurses are so strapped financially, is that they're often working other jobs in the days off when it was sold that they would be with their families.
Right.
Or they're working extra shifts, which are still 12 and a half hour shifts.
Wow. So is there like anything that we can do to like value nurses better, do you think?
So the government scrapped the nursing bursary last year in England. And it's a training bursary that enables nurses to train with a little bit of money. It's not much. In Scotland, they actually put the bursary up. So nurses training in Scotland get £10,000 a year. Student nurses in England are having to work three jobs as well as train as a student nurse. And they're also working nights and these awful shifts that we're talking about. And when they are at work, it's so busy that they are quite literally missing meals, skipping drinking water for fear that they'll have to nip to the toilet. And what that means is that the nurse dropout rate is astonishing. So people don't get to the end of their training. And when they do get to the end of the training, nurses are leaving the NHS faster than they're joining. So retention is a massive, massive problem. When they scrapped the bursary, nurse training numbers went down by a third almost immediately. And it was the mature students and students who wanted to train in mental health and learning disabilities nursing who actually didn't apply. So the numbers are really, really seriously worrying. About 42,000 nurses short in England. And the effects of that are going to be that we will hear over this winter, time and time again, that there are no beds. When we hear that there are no beds, it doesn't mean there isn't a physical bed. It means there is no nurse to look after the patient in that bed. And that's something that the media haven't really picked up on.
And you said that you couldn't carry on with nursing any longer. Can you tell me why that was and what the pressures were on you?
I've at various points in my career felt burnt out or compassion fatigue, or there are lots of different names for things. I'm fairly sure I had post-traumatic stress symptoms at various times from all the things I've seen and touched and smelled and not got any support for. And at various times I thought I can't carry on, but I did carry on. And then the following week something would happen which would be amazing. And nursing is the hardest job in the world, but it's also the best job in the world. And it is the most rewarding. And the rewarding times are so rewarding that it spurs you on through the really difficult times.
Yeah.
And so I've looked after lots of patients that I thought, for example, wouldn't make it despite our best efforts, who've just surprised me and given me hope in very dark times. And I carried on nursing for a long time after I've had periods of thinking I won't do it anymore. And then the final thing that changed, and the reason I gave up, was a very practical reason. It was that I just couldn't physically manage teaching and nursing and writing. And I mean, my writing now, I'm regularly working 60 or 70 hours a week, writing, doing PR, travelling, and all the other stuff that goes with writing. So I just physically don't have any time to nurse. So I never left the profession in terms of thinking, that's it, I'm done. But I'd certainly had moments where I felt like that. And then something had changed and I remembered why I did it in the first place, which is that it's a bit like sitting at an airport. You know, when you sit at an airport and you see people and you see love close up and you see people coming and going, hospitals can be like that. You see people at their most extreme and that's sometimes really bad, but mostly, for the most part, you see love close up, and that's an amazing thing to work with.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, wow, that was brilliant. I really feel like we should get Christy together with Richard Curtis. You know, there could be a brilliant film to be made about the NHS.
That's true.
Yeah, she's got that real ability, hasn't she, to make you realise the highs and lows of nursing and I guess how weirdly addictive it is whilst being incredibly tough.
Yes, very true. I would really recommend the book she has written, The Language of Kindness. It's full of vignettes of nursing life and her career. In fact, Adam Kay, the doctor who wrote the bestseller This Is Going to Hurt.
Yeah, it's on my shelf of books waiting to be read.
Well, it's a cracker.
Yeah.
So he wrote a review in The Guardian about Christie's book and said out of the 57 medical memoirs, this was the one to resuscitate his faith in the genre.
Ah, it's kind of high praise.
Exactly. And in fact, he was sort of spot on with the whole review of her book, actually. So that's also worth a read, his review.
Yeah, definitely. I think what's really great is that whilst Christy's no longer a nurse, she's clearly a very strong voice and advocate for nursing and, you know, highlighting the problems such as the dropping numbers of nurses. You know, I had no idea that when we hear about there being no beds, regularly, actually, what that means is that there are no nurses. It's not that there aren't the beds, it's that there aren't the nurses.
Yeah, I didn't realise that either.
You know, and the shortfall of 4,000 nurses in England alone, which sounds absolutely shocking.
Yeah, I think with all the talk around Brexit at the moment, that some of these sort of home problems are just being completely missed.
Do you think?
Yeah, okay. It is a worry. So talking of Brexit, how was your Christmas, Susie? Did you manage to avoid the subject or was everyone talking about it?
No, they weren't talking about it too much. I think we were all coming from a fairly similar place. We were talking about whether we should be having a second referendum. It's that kind of quandary, isn't it, between whether we should be having a second referendum or not. And I think my feeling is that whether we do or whether we don't, we shouldn't be going for a hard Brexit because the vote was so close that actually there isn't a mandate for a hard Brexit. So that's my focus at the moment. But honestly, we don't have enough time to go into the full.
We're going to move on.
We could
on
go
Brexit,
on for
don't worry,
hours
not,
and hours
there's
about
radio
this.
Time being given there to is. Brexit, isn't there? But yeah, I was pleased that we did have one admission from a family member that they should never have voted to leave. So that was a satisfying moment over the Christmas period. But mostly, we kept off the subject.
Safe.
So now we've had three podcasts in our season for people working to do good. Have you seen any links between them, Susie? Like, does it make you feel like doing more good?
Do you know, I think it's highlighted the toll that these jobs take on the workers. Obviously, Christy talked about the 12.5-hour shifts, which is just phenomenal, and the lack of nurses and the burnout that she experienced. And we didn't even go into the night shifts, which, you know, I think there's a lot of research that night shifts have been proven to shave years off your life. They're really not good for you at all, are they?
Yeah, I had a look into this, and like they've even done a huge study of nurses in the States. They've studied 75,000 female registered nurses for 22 years.
Okay, that's pretty extensive.
Yeah, it's pretty extensive, isn't it? And it included an interview with each nurse every other year. So, and of the women who worked rotating night shifts for more than 6 years, apparently 11% experienced a shortened lifespan, which increased like the longer they had worked those kind of shifts. And women who worked rotating night shifts for more than 15 years also experienced a 25% higher risk of death due to lung cancer.
So what are those kind of...
I don't know if they've just driven them to smoking. What?
Okay, so the lung cancer may be, but what are the risks associated with...
Well, apparently, like one of the points that really stood out for me was like eating a triple chocolate muffin in the middle of the night. That's just a sort of example. But the sugar and the fat hang around in your bloodstream for much longer than if you'd eaten it during the day.
Really. Okay, so body is metabolizing differently at night.
We don't adjust to night shifts like we thought we did, sort of thing. We don't adjust to night shifts like we thought we did. And high blood sugar levels are obviously significantly higher in people who are working night shifts. So that can lead to type 2 diabetes. And the raised fat levels can cause heart disease. It may also explain like high levels of obesity in those working at night.
Yeah, and certainly when I've watched One Born Every Minute, you know, they always have like some biscuits or a big tin of roses or something on the go. You know, I guess it's the only way to get through those shifts, isn't it? To stock up on sugar.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you're feeling particularly tired, you want chocolate and instant energy much more, don't you? So it's kind of like a double effect because you're also not burning it off so well.
Yeah, I get we're getting dangerously close to just talking about our own habits here. So let's move swiftly on. Do we have a podcast recommendation, Claire, for this week?
Yeah, so with our backstory season in mind of people doing good, and last week's story of Nikki and Alan, who worked for Norwich's homeless charity, I noticed that The Untold put out a similar story just after us last week.
So for anyone that doesn't know, The Untold is the BBC one with Grace Dent, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's called No Place for the Homeless, and based in Corby, and it was about a woman who is trying to set up a homeless shelter and was coming up against quite a lot of opposition. So, yeah.
Okay. So kind of an unfolding story.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it was great.
Fantastic. Okay, thank you. I will have a listen to that. So what are your New Year's resolutions? Are you making any New Year's resolutions? What do you think of them?
Well, I was thinking about New Year's resolutions and I sort of looked up a bit about this, and apparently 90% of New Year's resolutions fail very early on. So I sort of thought, right, should I just leave New Year's resolutions and assume that 2019 is going to be the same as 2018? But apparently research has shown that setting an easy New Year's resolution is actually easier than just trying to maintain the status quo. So I'm going with that. And so I'm going with some goal is definitely better than no goal.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
But just make it fairly easy. Okay. And hopefully I'm going to be able to stick to it. So.
Okay. So what kind of things?
Apparently,
a super modest goal?
Well, apparently taking up a sort of pleasant hobby can have like significant impacts on your well-being, and joyful resolutions are sort of much easier to keep.
Okay, so kind of something, a resolution to do something that you'll want to do rather than depriving yourself of
something
that feels like a positive.
Yeah, I like it. And so something that is kind of giving yourself something rather than taking something away.
Okay.
So I've booked you in for synchronized swimming course.
I've just spent the morning swimming with 8 children. So swimming is the last thing I want to do at the moment. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think that if you set yourself a sort of realistic, smallish target and you achieve it, then it spurs you on to do more, doesn't it?
Exactly.
And you feel encouraged by that rather than aiming really high. Just don't aim high, basically, Claire.
I know. We say it to each other every day. Just don't aim too high. and you'll be happy.
Slowly catching.
So yeah, so my only resolution that I've come up with so far, maybe you've got one for me, Susie, but I'm going to sleep with my phone in another room. I mean, I'm going to
sleep. With your phone?
I'm going to sleep.
What will your husband say about this?
I think I'll have a lot more fun with it. No, I mean, I'm going to sleep in another room from my phone.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And I brought a special clock for Patrick for Christmas, which wakes you with glowing lights and the sound of birds.
Oh, my God. I just leave the curtains drawn and let sunlight do the same.
No, but imagine we'd wake up to late o'clock, would we?
Well, that's true at this time of year. No, that's fine. Well, I have no resolution. Well, no, I do have a bit of a resolution, which is just to kind of use a bit less, just a bit less everything, a bit less food, a bit less drink, a bit less, you know.
Use a little bit less.
Yeah, consume a little bit less of everything.
God, you're going to waste away to nothing,
oh,
Susie.
Christ, not after the amount of Christmas cake I've just eaten. Anyway, okay, well, on that cheery note, resolutions under our belt. Happy New Year to you. Apparently it's the year of the pig, by the way, Claire, just in case you were wondering.
So, so let's hope 2019 is good for everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are the Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at the Backstory Pod on Twitter. Search for The Backstory with Claire and Susie in your podcast directory.
For sponsorship opportunities, or if you'd like to take part in a show, please contact hello@thebackstorypodcast.co.uk. The Backstory Podcast is produced by Tin Shed Productions.